Let's turn back to Acts chapter 15 and that last paragraph from verse 36 to 41. Last four Sunday mornings I've been preaching on Barnabas and learning some things from his example and character. So we finished that series, but this is just a postscript. Last Sunday morning we were thinking about Barnabas as a man of grit. Remember, he was a man of generosity, a man of goodness, a man of grace, and a man of grit. And we saw something of his and Paul's grittiness, the strength of character, the courage that they showed when they were out on this first missionary journey in Acts 13 and 14, going into completely evangelized places with the gospel and often facing great persecution and danger, but doing so with the utmost of courage. Such men are an inspiration. It's been our privilege recently as a congregation to have a few inspiring people, people like Mari and Osamu working in Japan, and Adam working in Central Asia, and I heard Maureen McLeod as well over in Glenelg a couple of weeks ago working in Bahrain. So we want to be like that. We want to be people who, while we're not on some international mission task or journey, we're here in Kailakan, Drumbui, wherever we are, as missionaries as well, and we want to be gritty and courageous, not cowed and intimidated by the people around us. So I thought it'd be good to come back and just complete the story of Barnabas tonight before I take a week's holiday look at this passage, which is the last time Barnabas is mentioned in the book of Acts, from Acts 15. And we read in verse 39 that Paul and Barnabas, they had such a sharp disagreement about whether or not to take John Mark on their revisiting of the churches that they planted, that they parted company. And Barnabas took Mark and sailed for Cyprus, but Paul chose Silas and left, commended by the brothers to the grace of the Lord. And he went through Syria and Cilicia, strengthening the churches. So we're now at AD 50. We're just 20 years after the resurrection, and 2 years after the missionary journey of Acts 13 and 14. Paul proposes to Barnabas, verse 36, let's go back and visit the brothers in all the towns where we preach the word of the Lord and see how they're doing. Sounds like just a great thing to want to do. And there's these churches out there and they're all on their own. And as I said this morning, as we were ordaining Ken, Paul and Barnabas appointed elders in those churches who'd only been Christians for matters of weeks, maybe a few months in the longest cases. And they must have thought, well, I wonder how they're doing, and are our prayers for these churches being answered? Let's go back and strengthen the works. Great, great heart of Paul to want to do this. And not only that, their whole approach has been clarified by the Acts, by the Council of Jerusalem in Acts 15 here, where the relationship with the Jewish church in Jerusalem, with the Gentile church in many other parts of the Mediterranean world now, has been clarified that to help that relationship really come together, the Gentile church should abstain from blood, from food sacrificed to idols, from the meat of strangled animals, and from sexual immorality. And to do that will help to really bring the two different cultures, the Jewish and the Gentile culture, together in the church. So they can go out now and deliver the message and decision of the Jerusalem Council and strengthen the work. So, are we just going ourselves, says Barnabas to Paul? And, yeah, I think so. Oh, that's fine. We were the ones that went on the journey. What about taking along John Mark again, says Barnabas? We discover in the book of Colossians that Mark is actually Barnabas' cousin. So they're blood relations as well. Mark had travelled with them in the first missionary journey. He'd set off from Antioch for the first time round. But he had, and the word here used in verse 37 is, sorry, verse 38 is the word deserted them. He deserted them in Pamphylia. So you can read about that in chapter 13 and verse 13. So they just started off on mainland Europe on their missionary journey. Well, it wasn't Europe, it was still part of Asia, Asia Minor, what we call Turkey today. And they just started off on the mainland there and Barnabas, Mark said, I'm going home. Almost like I'm going home to my mummy, because he wanted to go back to Jerusalem. And we learn in Acts chapter 12 and verse 12 that his mummy was in Jerusalem. So he wanted to go home to mummy, and just like every boy does. And Barnabas was more sympathetic to what had happened there than Paul. Now, we don't know from this tiny little episode, this tiny little passage, what really was going on here. We don't really know. We might like to guess. Perhaps Paul said something like, well, you know, you want to take John Mark, Barnabas, but we're going the same way we went last time. And how's it going to be any different for Mark this time? Because last time we went off through Cyprus, and then when we got into Asia Minor and started off through there, he was off. And it only got more dangerous after he left us last time. He's just not going to stick with us again. You remember what it was like. But Barnabas says, yeah, I know, Paul, I know, but he wants to go, and he's learned from last time. He's learned his lesson, and give him another chance, Paul. Isn't that what grace is about? They've got two very different perspectives. They both feel very, very strongly that they're right, and neither will accede to the other's point of view. So to look at it in its most positive light, what actually happens is they agree to disagree. And their difference of opinion stimulates a new approach. And the new approach is that instead of one team departing, two teams depart. And Paul and Silas head straight for Asia Minor. And Barnabas and John Mark head to Cyprus. Remember, Barnabas is from Cyprus. And he's going back to work in Cyprus. So Barnabas is going to his home island, and Paul and Silas are heading off up to actually areas near where Paul himself is from. Now, we're not to think then that there was any sort of break in their friendship, because you could take that away just from this passage. You might think, oh, well, that's it. There's a bust up, and they've not exhibited the love we just sang about there. Instead, they've gone their separate ways, and they're in the huff with each other. But it's not really like that at all. Paul and Barnabas remain friends. Paul and Mark remain friends. They're mature people. Paul and Barnabas are said to be full of the Spirit. And they're not going to let a disagreement about a methodology or about how they're going to approach the missionary work or about whether or not to take someone spoil that relationship. You can pick up through the letters of Paul several references to Barnabas and to Mark, and these are after this event. So 4 years after this separation in AD 54, Paul writes of himself and Barnabas in 1 Corinthians in chapter 9, and he speaks about their common approach to their work. So they're working and they're thinking together. 10 years later, we read in Philemon and Colossians as well about Paul sending the greetings of John Mark to the church. So Mark's actually working with Paul 10 years later, as we read in Philemon and Colossians. And then about 15 years after this episode, in 2 Timothy 4, verse 11, Paul calls Mark helpful to me in my ministry. So you see, the relationships continued, and it's not a disagreement that is like many disagreements that sadly we see in the church today, where people go their separate ways and that's the end of it. The relationship's broken. Now we're thinking about Barnabas particularly, this gritty man, and he heads for his home island of Cyprus with Mark, and his intention is to go there and strengthen the churches that were established in Cyprus, and that's it. We don't actually hear of Barnabas again in the book of Acts. Paul goes off to Asia Minor to do the same thing. So let's stop now and just think about what happens in church disagreements in Kyle of Lahalsh. I'm not going to get too close to the bone here, but people often don't behave in the spirit. And we know what worldly disputes look like, because we can see them all the time. I've been discussing with people just now about whether or not the cows should go back to Plockton, for example. And you see the way that different people approach that. And I resisted the temptation to go along to the meeting about whether the cows should go back to Plockton, because I'd just have been wrong with the wrong motives to watch people kind of play off one another and so on, and wouldn't have been good. But the Free Press reported it as being a heated discussion, so I wonder what that looked like. But in any case, when people who are not in the church generally disagree, often friendships are broken, and often behaviour is exhibited that is not helpful to relationships being close and to relationships continue. Sadly, Christians often do exactly the same thing. They just look like the world. So there's a dispute. And the dispute actually has the result of stopping the work of the gospel going on. Because what happens is everyone gets caught up in the dispute in the church. And I've been here long enough to have seen several church disputes in the South of Skye and in Lahalsh. I've seen just immediately think of three churches that have formed out of those disputes in that area. If I think a bit more, I could probably think of one or two others. And so people have broken relationships and sometimes not speaking properly to each other anymore. Sides are taken. And instead of people's common identity being, I'm a Christian and I'm for Jesus and together we're working for the church, they're taking sides. And so, you know, one is saying, well, I'm for this issue, and the others are saying, no, I'm against this issue. And they identify with each other in their relationship with each other in that way, for and against. And the relationship just breaks down. So it could have happened that in the church at Antioch, you'd have some people saying, I'm with Paul on this. You know, I don't give the guy a second chance. He messed up. And someone else is saying, no. Come on, this is grace that we're working in the church. I'm with Barnabas. Come on, let's give the guy another opportunity. And you could see people becoming quite heated over the thing, and especially with the two big personalities of Paul and Barnabas involved. The fault lines start to form in the church at Antioch, and eventually other issues get brought in that have been bugging people, and so people start to divide along those lines, and eventually they split into two new churches. But that's not what happens. That's not what happens at Antioch. Not at all. It's just simply not the case. So these two men and the church, despite the difference on this issue, they remain close friends and they remain committed completely to their identity as men of God who want to share the gospel with the world. And they've got that common thing that binds them far above what they think about John Mark. Far, far above that. But it's funny today, and just reading some of the people that were writing on this passage that I was reading, just for help and understanding it. Today, actually, what Christian writers tend to do with this passage is they tend to take sides. And one writer will say, you know, maybe we can actually see Barnabas' side more these days because we understand more clearly the Gospels about giving people second chances and third chances and so on. And other people say, no, Paul, the demands of the journey were so great and the dangers that you really had to know that the people that were with you were those gritty, tough guys that could cope with the challenges. And what happens is people start passing judgment on the situation here, about which we know absolutely or virtually nothing. It says in verse 39 they had a sharp disagreement. The word is simply the word that gives us our English word, paroxysm. They had a paroxysm. And we don't really exactly know what that word means in this context. We just don't know. So there was some kind of upset, some kind of stimulation came out of this situation to allow two groups to go and do two missionary journeys at the same time. But instead people begin to read into the passage and they begin to pass judgment. And don't we do that all the time? We hear a little detail of some dispute and we build up this big picture in our minds of what it's all about when we actually don't know anything. We have no reason to take sides here. We don't have enough information. And why would we want to anyway? It's just a report of something that happened. And you can see as well that Luke is very discreet. I'm sure that Luke knows exactly the ins and outs of the story, but he doesn't tell us. It's not a great way, great example. You know, what happens again in Kyle of Walsh's, if there's a dispute, then one side will tell everyone their version of it, and the other side will tell everyone their version of it. Why don't both sides just discreetly say, well, we don't agree, but, you know, we agree to be Christians. We agree to follow the Lord together. We agree to bring the gospel to Kyle together. And we're not going to go into all the ins and outs of what happened and who said what and who behaved badly and so on. Because Luke just doesn't do that. He just discreetly passes over all that. He passes no judgment on Paul. He passes no judgment on Barnabas. Can we do the same when there are differences of opinion in the Christian world and in the Christian context that we have here in this area? Be discreet. There's nothing to be gained by going into the details of the dispute here, and both sides no doubt have good arguments, but instead just to take a higher ground of saying, well, whatever the difference is, we're never going to know enough to be able to pass judgment. Only God can do that. But instead, we do know enough to keep loving, to keep seeking to bring people together and hold people together. So again, in our context, people, when the dispute happens, they focus on defending their stance. You know, we feel the need to defend our position, and we stop focusing on our Christian mission, and churches and people get bitter and they retreat from one another. And what happens is that when you've got divisions, the sum of the parts after the disagreement and the division does not add up to the original whole. Some people stop going to church at all. Some people stop serving God in the way they had in the past. And there is always loss when there is division. There's always loss. But what we're seeing in this passage is that Paul and Barnabas, they were not divided. They disagreed, but they were not divided. That's the example that we want to follow. We may disagree, but we don't divide. They keep their friendship. They keep affirming one another's work, as we saw in Paul's letters, he does. They keep giving themselves to the Lord's work. They keep ensuring that the kingdom of Christ goes forward. And it's clearly not a bad disagreement in any case, because they're able to agree to go to different places. It's not like Paul says, okay, you're going to Cyprus, well, I'm going to Cyprus as well. And whoever gets there first, you know, it's not like that. And they say, okay, so you want to take Mark? I don't want to take Mark, but Barnabas, my dear brother, let's make the most of this situation, and I'll take Silas, and I'll go straight on to Asia Minor. You take Mark, and you go to Cyprus. We'll cover the ground twice as fast because there's two teams, and I look forward to seeing you when we all get back to Antioch to report on the progress. Barnabas, whom we've been following particularly, goes off to Cyprus and continues to be that gritty and courageous leader that he's been all along. And just as he went 3 years previously to Antioch all on his own, remember when the church exploded in Antioch into life, and Barnabas was sent from Jerusalem on his own to this situation. So now Barnabas goes, not quite on his own. He's got John Mark, but Barnabas is clearly the man that is carrying the responsibility. So, this little passage, I think, then tells us that, yeah, even when Christians do disagree, we must still keep our focus on the things that really matter. Barnabas and Paul are still utterly focused on telling other people about Jesus, utterly focused on strengthening the churches, utterly focused on helping Christians to grow in their faith, absolutely focused on the glory of Jesus in the world. And they're totally agreed on that, even though they have a difference of opinion about whether or not John Mark should go with them. When that focus stops, it really becomes a work of the flesh, it becomes a work of the devil. And when we stop focusing on those who need to hear about Jesus, when we stop focusing on those who need to grow in the relationship with Jesus and become focused on division, and that really is a work of the flesh. So let's look at our own hearts just for a minute as we come to a close. Has this happened in our own experience? Have we taken sides in church disputes where you've got a bunch of Christians who all love Jesus, but somehow or other they've got into dispute and are not getting on? Have we taken sides and found ourselves on one side of a divide and found relationships damaged as a result? Because what will happen then is our lives become very much focused on and preoccupied with the issues around the division, and we stop focusing on Jesus. We stop focusing on the mission of the church, and we find ourselves then spiritually withering, wilting. The church withering and wilting. And if we've been like that, and maybe even we're in recovery from a situation like that, then we do really need to repent if what happened was we took sides, one Christian against another, when both Christians were sincerely trying to make the right decisions about following Jesus. Let's try and get our focus back on Jesus, get our focus back on the mission of the church, like Barnabas and like Paul. There's a world outside of the Church of Christ in this area that needs Christians to keep focused on the mission. If we focus on division, we focus on our church and why we are what we are and why we're not what they are and all that sort of thing, then we've lost sight of why we exist. Someone has said that the church is the only organisation which exists for the benefits of those who don't belong to it. You can pick holes in that if you want, but just think about that. You know, it's absolutely essential that we keep our focus on the needs of the people out around us who need Jesus Christ, because if they don't receive Jesus Christ, they live without, they die without, they spend eternity without Jesus. And that becomes much more likely if the church is looking in at its own problems and disputes. Dear friends, let us love one another, for love is from God. Jesus said, "By this all men will know that you're my disciples, if you love one another." So let's focus very much on together, not just this group here, but together with all who love the Lord Jesus in this community, in this area, making sure that the people of this area, people around us, your family, your colleagues, your neighbours, your friends, hear about Jesus. Because they need to hear about Jesus. And perhaps you're the only person positioned to tell them about Jesus. And if you consume your spiritual energy by focusing on disputes and disagreements, then they'll not hear about Jesus from you. And if they don't, they may never hear, and they may never believe. So it's absolutely essential that Paul and Barnabas show us the way here. Yeah, Christians don't always agree. But what should mark out Christians is not that they don't disagree, but the way that they disagree. They should disagree amiably, disagree in love, disagree in unity, and continue in that unity, serving the Lord together, as Paul and Barnabas did here.